Hey guys, it's Sunday reading day, and I'll be reading from the book 25 Ghost Stories, written by various authors. I'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Happy Easter, everybody. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you think you have a paranormal issue, we can help you. It just might take us a couple days to get out there, but we definitely can help you. So, give us a call, or you can find us online everywhere. I mean everywhere. You can check Facebook, everywhere you can think of, you can find us online. Okay, well, I'm still sitting down low today. In fact, the funny thing is, Google is strange. Google has me zoomed in more. If you notice, I'm zoomed in more with Google. And I think that's why it's showing me closer. The issue I have is that when I first started this thing up, I was up higher. And now that I actually got in the show, now I'm down lower. So I have to make adjustments for Google. The issue I'm having right now is Microsoft Bing has kind of taken over my other internet, and I don't know how to fix that. And the fact that, you know, it's running Skype, so it's running Skype all the time, the camera, and that means when I go to open the camera up in Firefox, which Bing has taken over for somehow, I can't open the camera because the camera thinks I'm trying to run two at once. So here I am at Google. But anyway, at least I have some place to broadcast from. If you're watching from Facebook today, and I know a lot of you are, please feel free to subscribe. Hit that follow button if you haven't done so already. You know, we're always looking for followers. And, you know, if you like what you hear and see today, go ahead and give me a thumbs up, happy heart, smiley face, because what that does is that puts us up higher in the algorithms. Okay, we'll call it algorithms. Facebook sees that. It's the FYP algorithms. Facebook sees that, and it puts us up higher, and it sends us out to more people, you know, because we're trying to reach as many people as possible with these shows. Works the same way on YouTube. I have 900 videos sitting over at YouTube. And I'm also a photojournalist, so I don't like to do the same type of shows every night, you know, the same themed. So you'll see a lot of different themed shows. And again, you know, if you haven't subscribed already, I think, please feel free to do so if you like what you see today. That goes for everywhere else. If you're on TikTok, you know, that whole algorithm thing, it works on TikTok, all the other social media stations. Okay, well, today is Sunday reading day. I know it's Easter. Usually I do an Easter show to Easter dishes. I just decided to read because we were up late last night. At least 40 or 50 of you were up with me last night when I was building an Easter gingerbread house. It was more complicated build than I thought, so I didn't quite finish the build, but I will be finishing it late tonight. So for tomorrow's show, which is going to be back in the studio because I'm going to, we're going to be building Lego Yoda. Do some more work on Lego Yoda tomorrow. I will have it done for you guys, and you guys can take a look at it at that point. And I'll even post some photos on Facebook and TikTok and different places for you guys to see. It's turning out kind of cool. But like I said, it was a little bit more complicated of a build than I thought it was. So, yeah. But tomorrow, again, I'll be on at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, and we'll be in the other studio building Lego Yoda. Okay? All right, so last week when we read the book, we ended in the middle of the story, and I didn't like that today, so we're starting at the beginning of that particular story, okay? That's where we're starting, and then we're just going to go on from there. I appreciate your patience on this, because maybe some of you haven't heard this story yet, right? So that's what I'm going to be doing, and I'll be reading for a little under an hour today. In order to do these recordings like this for StreamYard, I have to be right at an hour, or I have to upload to YouTube and it gets involved. And yeah, so I'd rather do it this way so I can get it out to everybody at once, just like a normal show. So the book we have is 25 ghost stories, and some of them are true ghost stories, some of them aren't. Let me get something pretty careful. See, Grogu?
My cup.
Some of them are true ghost stories, some of them aren't, and it's hard to tell which is which. And that's the thing, there's no clarification as to, you know, is it real, is it, or isn't it? So that's what makes the book kind of interesting. So it leaves it up to your opinion on these stories, whether or not they are real. So for about 51% in the book, according to what I'm, you know, according to my pocketbook thing on my tablet. So, I thought maybe today would be the day that we'd have to switch, you know, into a new book, but I think it'll be next week sometime. All right, so I will read for you for a little under an hour. We're 5 minutes into the show, so you figure you're going to get probably 60, you'll probably get like 50 minutes of me reading. So, you know, kick back, put your fuzzies on, grab some popcorn, grab some hot cocoa. Maybe you're finishing up Easter dinner. Maybe you're having Easter dessert or whatever. Just sit back and dim the lights, and we're going to read some ghost stories. Here we go. And let me power up my tablet, and away we go. And I still have my squeaky chair, and I'm going to keep my squeaky chair because I like my squeaky chair. It's comfy. It's like me. It squeaks. That's a joke. And what I like now is the weather's supposed to get better, so I'm going to be out working, finishing off my front yard, getting in my backyard, setting up my stuff back there, and I could do some broadcasts back there even. It's really pretty at night once I do get it fully set up. It's a sight to behold back there. It's like my own enchanted tiki room. For those of you that have been to Disney, it's my own enchanted tiki room in my backyard. So these stories in this book are from various authors. And it's interesting for me to read because, you know, every story is like a different style of writing. So I have to really watch what I'm doing with it. Okay. I think I liked it better before. There it is, pocketbooks. Okay. I have to enlarge this. Can't see close with my contacts. As you guys know, when I put my face right against the screen, right? It's kind of scary. Spooky for you, isn't it? And it jumped. Okay, there we go. We are reading from Colonel Halifax's Ghost Story is what we're reading from. Let me get this enlarged to where I can actually read it. And the other key of this is that I'm going to have to give me a minute to move this around so I get to the size I need. And make sure, and it just jumped on me, so I'm going to have to find it. So just bear with me. It jumped on me. I don't know where I'm at now. Oh, sigh. I know it's here, but I don't know where it went. I hate when it does that. This is really, unlike a Kindle, this is very sensitive to touch. So if I like tap it like up on the side or someplace, it's going to jump on me. Okay, so here we go. And it is now 8 minutes in. So I will be reading, like I said, about 45 to 50 minutes today. So I can mark it on my clock over here where the show started 8 minutes. Okay. This is where it gets interesting to start. So we're 8 minutes in. Okay. All right. I'll just have to watch it on the screen as well. I got a clock up there. Okay. Here we go. Colonel Halifax's Ghost Story. I had just come back to England. Thank you for closing. I really appreciate when you do that. It just went dark and it's going dark again. What the hey? I had just come back to England after having been some years in India and was looking forward to meet my friends, among whom there was none I was more anxious to see than Sir Francis Linton. We had been to Eton together, and for the short time I had been at Oxford before entering the army, we had been at the same college. Then we had parted. He came into the title and estates of the family in Yorkshire on the death of his grandfather. His father had predeceased, and I had been over a good part of the world. One visit, indeed, I had made him in his Yorkshire home before leaving for India up but a few days. It will be easily imagined how pleasant it was, 2 or 3 days after my arrival, pull back a little bit, after my arrival in London, to receive the letter from Linton saying that he had just seen the papers that I had arrived, and begging me to come down at once to Byfield, his place in Yorkshire. "You're not to tell me," he said, "that you cannot come. In fact, you are to come on Monday. I have a couple of horses which will just suit you. The carriage shall meet you at Packham, and all you have to do is put yourself in the train, which leaves King's Cross at 12 o'clock. Accordingly, on the day appointed, I started in due time, reached Packham, losing much time on a date stable branch line, and there found the dog,
There I found the dog cart of Sir Francis awaiting me. I drove at once to Byfield. The house I remembered. It was a low gable structure of no great size, with old-fashioned lattice windows separated from the park, where were deer by a charming terrace garden. No sooner did the wheels crunch the gravel by the principal entrance than, almost before the bell was rung, the porch door opened, and there stood Linton himself, whom I had not seen for so many years, hardly altered, and with all the joy of welcome beaming in his face. Taking me by both hands, he drew me into the house, got rid of my hat and wraps, looked me all over, and then, in a breath, began to say how glad he was to see me, what a real delight it was to have got me at last under his roof, and what a good time we would have together, like the old days over again. He had sent my luggage up to my room, which was ready for me, and he bade me to make haste and dress for dinner. So saying, he took me through a paneled hall, up an old staircase, and showed me my room, which, hurried as I was, I observed was hung with tapestry, and had a large four-poster bed with velvet curtains opposite the window. They had gone into dinner when I came down, despite all the haste I made in dressing, but a place had been kept for me next to Lady Linton. Besides my hosts, there were their daughters, Colonel Linton, a brother of Sir Francis, the chaplain, and some others, whom I don't remember distinctly. After dinner, there was some music in the hall and a game of whilst in the drawing room, and after the ladies had gone upstairs, Linton and I retired to the smoking room, where we sat up talking the better part of the night. I think it must have been near 3 when I retired. Once in bed, I slept soundly with my servant's interest the next morning. I slept so soundly that my servant's interest the next morning failed to arouse me, and it was past 9 when I awoke. After breakfast and the disposal of the newspapers, Linton retired to his letters, and I asked Lady Linton if one of her daughters might show me the house. Elizabeth, the eldest, was summoned, and seemed in no way to dislike the task. The house was, as already intimated, by no means large. It occupied 3 sides of a square, the entrance and one end of the stables making the 4th side. The interior was full of interest. Passages, rooms, galleries, as well as hall, were paneled in dark wood and hung with pictures. I was shown everything on the ground. Losing much time on a detestable branch line. This is the one that was out of place, so we're not even going to go there. I was shown everything on the ground floor. See how it threw me off? And then the first floor. Then my guide proposed that we should ascend a narrow, twisting staircase that led to a gallery. We did as proposed, and entered a handsome long room or passage leading to a small chamber at one end, in which my guide told me her father kept books and papers. I asked if anyone slept in this gallery, as I noticed a bed and fireplace, and rods by means of which curtains might be drawn, enclosing one portion where were the bed and fireplace, so as to convert it into a very cozy chamber. She answered no. The place was not really used except as a playroom. Though sometimes, if the house happened to be very full, in her great-grandfather's time, she had heard that it had been occupied. By the time we had been over the house, and I had also been shown the garden and the stables, and introduced to the dogs, it was nearly 1 o'clock. We were to have an early luncheon, and to drive afterwards to see the ruins of one of the grand old Yorkshire abbeys. This was a pleasant expedition, and we got back just in time for tea, after which there was some reading aloud. The evening passed much in the same way as the preceding one, except that Linton, who had some business, did not go down to the smoking room, and I took the opportunity of retiring early in order to write a letter for the Indian mail, something having been said to the prospect of hunting the next day. I had finished my letter, which was a long one, together with 2 or 3 others, and had just gone into bed when I heard a step overhead, as of someone walking along the gallery, which I now knew ran immediately above my room. It was a slow, heavy, measured tread, which I could hear getting gradually louder and nearer, and then, as gradually fading away, as it retreated into the distance. I was startled for a moment, having been told that the gallery was unused, but the next instant it occurred to me that I had been told it communicated with the chamber where Sir Francis kept books and papers. I knew he had some writing to do, and I thought no more on the matter. I was down the next morning at breakfast in good time. How late were you last night? I asked Linton in the middle of breakfast. I heard you overhead after 1 o'clock. Linton replied rather shortly, indeed you did not, for I was in the bed last night before 12. There was something certainly moving overhead last night, I answered, for I heard his steps as distinctly as I ever heard anything in my life going down the gallery. Upon which Colonel Linton remarked that he had often fancied he had heard steps on the staircase, which he knew that no one was about. He was apparently disposed to say more, when his brother interrupted him somewhat curtly, as I fancied, and asked me if I should feel inclined after breakfast to have a horse and go out and look for the hounds. They met a considerable way off, but if they did not find their coverts, they would draw first. A thing not improbable. They would come our way, and we might fall in with them about 1 o'clock and have a run. I said there was nothing I should like better. Linton mounted me on a very nice chestnut, and the rest of the party, having gone out shooting, and the young ladies being otherwise engaged, he and I started at 5 o'clock for our ride. It was a beautiful day, soft, with a bright sun, one of those beautiful days which so frequently occur in the early part of November. On reaching the hilltop where Linton had expected to meet the hounds, no trace of them was to be discovered. They must have found at once and run different direction. At 3 o'clock, after we had eaten our sandwiches, Linton reluctantly abandoned all hopes of falling in with the hounds and said we would return home by a slightly different route. We had not descended the hill before we came on an old chalk quarry and the remains of a disused kiln. I recollected the spot at once. I had been there with Sir Francis on my former visit many years ago. "Why, bless me," said I. "Do you remember Linton? Do you remember, Linton, what happened here when I was with you before?" There had been men engaged removing chalk, and they came on a skeleton under some depth of rubble. We went together to see it removed, and you said you would have it preserved till it could be examined by some ethnologist or anthropologist. Any of those dry as dust, to decide whether the remains were dolichos, I can't say this word, dolichoce, phallus, or brachyphallus, whether British or Danish or modern. What was the result? Sir Francis hesitated a moment and then answered, it is true, I had the remains removed. Was there an inquest? No, I had been opening some of the tumuli in the wolds. I had sent a crouched skeleton and some skulls to Scarsborough Museum. This I was doubtful about, whether it was a prehistoric moment. In fact, to what date it belonged, no one thought of an inquest. On reaching the house, one of the grooms took the horses in answer to a question from Linton. Said that Colonel and Mrs. Hampshire had arrived about an hour ago, and that one of the horses being lame, the carriage in which they had driven over from Castle Frampton was to be put up for the night. In the drawing room, we found Lady Linton pouring out tea for her husband's sister and her husband, who, as we came in, exclaimed, we have come to beg a night's lodging. It appeared that they had been on a visit in the neighborhood and had been obliged to leave at a moment's notice. In consequence of a sudden death in the house where they were staying, and that, in the impossibility of getting a fly, their host had sent them over to Byfield. We thought, Mrs. Hampshire went on to say, that as we were coming here at the end of the week, you would not mind us a little sooner, or that, if the house were quite full, you would be willing to put us up anywhere till Monday, and let us come back later. Lady Linton interposed with the remark that it was all settled, and then, turning to her husband, added, but I want to speak to you for a moment. They both left the room together. Linton came back almost immediately, and, making an excuse to show me on a map of the hill the point to which we had ridden, said, as soon as we were alone, with a look of considerable annoyance, I'm afraid we must ask you to change your room. Shall you mind very much? I think we can make you quite comfortable upstairs in the gallery, which is the only room available. Lady Linton has had a good fire lit. The place is really not cold, and it will be only for a night or two. Your servant has been told to put your things together, but Lady Linton did not like to give orders to have them actually moved before my speaking to you. I assured him that I did not mind in the very least, that I should be quite as comfortable upstairs. but that I did mind very much their making such a fuss about a matter of that sort with an old friend like myself. Certainly nothing could look more comfortable than my new lodging when I went upstairs to dress. There was a bright fire in the large grate, an armchair had been drawn up beside it, and all my books and writing things had been put in, with a reading lamp in a central position. And the heavy tapestry curtains were drawn, converting this part of the gallery into a room to itself. Indeed, I felt somewhat inclined to congratulate myself on the change. The spiral staircase had been one reason against this place having been given to the Hampshires. No lady's long dress trunk could have mounted it. Service was necessarily a good deal occupied the evening with his sister and her husband, but he seemed time. Colonel Hampshire had also just heard that he was likely to be over in Egypt, and when Linton he retired to the smoking room, instead of going there, I went upstairs to my own room to finish a book in which I was interested. I did not, however, sit up long, and very soon went to bed. Before doing so, I drew back the curtains on the rods, partly because I like plenty of air where I sleep, and partly also because I thought I might like to see the play of the moonlight on the floor in the portion of the gallery beyond where I lay, and where the blinds had not been drawn. I must have been asleep for some time, for the fire, which I had left full blaze, was gone to a few sparks wandering among the ashes, when I suddenly awoke with an impression of having heard a latch click at the far end of the gallery, where was the chamber containing books and papers. I had always been a light sleeper, but on the present occasion, I woke at once to complete and add acute consciousness, and, with a sense of stretched attention, which seems to intensify all my faculties, the wind had also risen, and was blowing in fitful gusts around the house. A minute or two passed, and I began to almost fancy I must have been mistaken when I distinctly heard the creak of the door, and then the click of the latch falling back into place. Then I heard a sound on the boards as of one moving in the gallery. I sat up to listen, and as I did so, I distinctly heard steps coming down the gallery. "Who are you?" I heard them approach and pass my bed. I could see nothing. All was dark. But I heard the tread proceeding toward where the uncurtained and unshuttered windows, two in number. Hang on a second. Okay. Partly because I thought, let me do this again, okay? Before doing so, I drew back the curtains and the rods, partly because I lack plenty of air where I sleep, and partly also because the moonlight. Okay, so somewhere along the line it skipped on me. There we go. See, it went backwards on me. All right, two in number. But the moon shone through only one of these, the nearest. The other was dark, shadowed by the chapel or some other building at right angles. The tread seemed to me to pause now and again and then continue as before. I now fixed my eyes intently on the one illuminated window, and it appeared to me as if some dark body passed across it. But what? I listened intently and heard the step proceed to the end of the gallery and then return. I again watched the lighted window, and immediately that the sound reached that portion of the long passage, it ceased momentarily, and I saw, as distinctly as I ever saw anything in my life by moonlight, a figure of a man with marked features and what appeared to be a fur cap drawn over his brows. It stood in the embrasure of the window, and the outline of the face was in silhouette. Then it moved on, and as it moved, I again heard the tread. I was as certain as I could be that the thing, whatever it was, or the person, whoever he was approaching my bed. I threw myself back in the bed, and as I did see a mass of charred wood on the hearth fell down and sent up a flash of, I fancy, sparks that gave out a glare into the darkness, and by that red as blood, I saw a face near me. With a cry, over which I had little control as the scream uttered by a sleeper in agony of a nightmare, I called, "Who are you?" There was an instant during which my hair bristled on my head, as in the horror of the darkness, I prepared to grapple with the being at my side, when a board creaked as if someone had moved, and I heard the footsteps retreat, and again the click of the latch. The next instant, there was a rush on the stairs, and Linton burst into the room, just as he had sprung out of bed, crying, "For God's sake, what's the matter? Are you ill?" I could not answer. Linton struck a light and leaned over the bed. Then I seized him by the arm and said, without moving, "There has been something in this room, gone and thither." The words were hardly out of my mouth when Linton followed the direction of my eyes. When Linton, following the direction of my eyes, had sprung to the end of the corridor and thrown open the door there. He went into the room beyond, looked around it, returned, and said, "You must have been dreaming." By this time, I was out of bed. "Look for yourself," said he. And he led me to the little room. It was bare, with cupboards and boxes, and sort of a lumber place. "There's nothing beyond this," he said. "No door, no staircase. It is a blind way." Then he added, "Now pull on your dressing gown and come downstairs to my sanctum." I followed him. And after he had spoken to Lady Linton, who was standing with the door of her room ajar in a state of great agitation, he turned to me and said, "No one could have been in your room. You see, my and my wife's apartments are close below, and no one could come up the spiral staircase without passing my door. You must have had a nightmare." Directly, he screamed. I rushed up the steps and met no one descending. And there was no place for concealment in the lumber room at the end of the gallery. Then he took me into his private snuggery, blew up the fire, lighted the lamp, and said, "I shall be really grateful if you will say nothing about this. There are some in the house and neighborhood who are silly enough as it is. You stay here, and if you do not feel inclined to go to bed, read. Here are the books. I must go to Lady Linton, who is a good deal frightened and does not like to be left alone." He then went to his bedroom. Sleep, as far as I was concerned, was out of the question, nor do I think Sir Francis and his wife slept much either. I made up the fire, and after a time took up a book and tried to read, but it was useless. I sat absorbed in thoughts and questions till I heard the servants stirring in the morning. I went to my room, left the candle burning, and got into bed. I had just fallen asleep when my servant brought me a cup of tea at 8 o'clock. At breakfast, Colonel Hampshire and his wife asked if anything had happened in the night, as they had been much disturbed by noises overhead, to which Linton replied that I had not been very well and had an attack of cramp, and that he had been upstairs to look after me. From his manner, I could see that he wished me to be silent, and I said nothing accordingly. In the afternoon, when everyone had gone out, Sir Francis took me into his snuggery and said, "Halifax, I'm very sorry about that matter last night. It is quite true what my brother said. The steps have been heard about this house. But I never gave heed to such things, putting all the noises down to rats. But after your experiences, I feel that it is due to tell you something, and also to make you into an explanation. There was no one in the room at the end of the corridor, except the skeleton that was discovered in the chalk pit when you were here many years ago. I confess I had not paid much heed to it. My archaeological fancies passed. I had no visits from anthropologists. The bones and skull were never shown to experts, but remained packed in a chest in that lumber room. I confess I ought to have buried him, having no more scientific use for them. But I did not, on my word. I forgot all about them, or, at least, gave no heed to them. However, what you have gone through and have described to me has made me uneasy." My neighbors are partying today. They got the music on. "And has also given me a suspicion that I can account for that body in a manner that which never occurred to me before." After a pause, he added, "What I'm going to tell you is known to no one else and must not be mentioned by you, anyhow, in my lifetime. You know now that, owing to the death of my father, when quite young, I and my brother and sister were brought up here with our grandfather, Sir Richard. He was an old, imperious, hot-tempered man. I tell you what I've made out of a matter that was a mystery for a long time, and I will tell you afterwards how I came to unravel it. My grandfather was in the habit of going out at night with a young underkeeper, of whom he was very fond, to look after the game and see if any poachers, whom he regarded as his natural enemies, were about. One night, as I suppose my grandfather had been out with the young man in question, and returning by the plantations, where the hill is steepest and not far from his chalk pit. You remarked on yesterday. They came upon a man who, though not actually belonging to the country, was well known in it as a sort of traveling tinker of indifferent character and a notorious poacher. Mind this, I'm not sure it was at the place I mentioned. I only now surmise it. On this particular night in question, my grandfather and the keeper must have caught this man setting snares. There must have been a tussle, and in the course of which, as subsequent circumstances have led me to imagine, the man showed fight and was knocked down by one or the other of the two, my grandfather or the keeper. I believe that after having made various attempts to restore him, they found that the man had actually died. They were both in great alarm and concern, my grandfather especially. He had been prominent in putting down some factory riots and given orders to the military to fire, whereby several lives had been lost. There was a vast outcry against him, and a certain political party had denounced him as an assassin. No man was more vitributed yet now, in my conscience. I believe he acted with both discretion and pluck and arrested a mischievous movement that may have led to much bloodshed. Be that as it may, my impression is that he lost his head over this fatal affair with the tinker, and that he and the keeper together buried the body secretly, not far from the place where he was killed. I now think it was in the chalk pit, and that the skeleton found years after there belonged to the man. Good heavens, I exclaimed, as at once my mind rushed back to the figure with the fur cap that I had seen against the window. Sir Francis went on. The sudden disappearance of the tramp, in view of his well-known habits and wandering mode of life, did not, for some time, excite surprise. But later on, one or two circumstances have led to suspicion. An inquiry was set on foot, and among others, my grandfather's keepers were examined before the magistrate. It was remembered afterwards that the underkeeper in question was absent at the time of the inquiry, my grandfather having sent him with some dogs to a brother-in-law of his who live upon the moors. But whether anyone noticed the fact, or if they did, preferred to be silent. No observations were made. Nothing came of the investigation. And the whole subject would have been dropped if it had not been that 2 years later, for some reason, I do not understand, but at the investigation of a magistrate recently imported into the division, whom my grandfather greatly disliked and who was opposed to him in politics, a fresh inquiry was instituted. In the course of that inquiry, it transpired that, owing to some unguarded words dropped by the underkeeper, a warrant was about to be issued for his arrest. My grandfather, who had a fit of the gout, was away from home at the time, but on hearing the news, he came home at once. That evening, he returned. He had a long interview with the young man, who left the house after he had supped in the servants' hall. It was observed that he looked much depressed. The warrant was issued the next day, but in the meantime, the keeper had disappeared. My grandfather gave orders to his people to do everything in their power to assist the authorities in the search that was once set on foot, but was unable himself to take any share in it. No trace of the keeper was found, although at a subsequent period, rumors circulated that he had been heard of in America. But the man, having been unmarried, he gradually dropped out of remembrance, and as my grandfather never allowed the subject to be mentioned in his presence, I should probably never have known anything about it for the vague tradition which always attaches to such events, and for this fact that after my grandfather's death, a letter came addressed to him from somewhere in the United States from someone, the name different from that of the keeper, but alluding to the past and implying the presence of a common secret, and, of course, with it came a request for money. I replied, mentioning the death of Sir Richard and asking for an explanation. I did get an answer, and it is from that I'm able to fill in so much of the story. But I never learned where the man had been killed and buried, and my next letter to the fellow was returned with deceased written across it. Somehow, it never occurred to me, till I heard your story, that possibly the skeleton in the chalk pit might be that of the poaching tinker. I will now most assuredly have it buried in the churchyard. This certainly ought to be done, said I. And, said Sir Francis, after a pause, I give you my word. After the burial of the bones, and you are gone, I will sleep for a week in the bed in the gallery and report you if I see or hear anything. If all be quiet, then, well, you form your own conclusions. I left a day after. Before long, I got a letter from my friend, brief but to the point. Old quiet, old boy. Come again. Okay. We have a little sip of water as we continue. Looking good. I'm going to increase this a little bit so I can see the clock on here. Just give me a second. That way I'll know where I'm at. Okay. The next one is called The Ghost of the Count. No author. So let me get this going. Let me increase this. Okay. Not far from the Alameda in the city of Mexico, there's a great old stone building in which once lived a very wealthy, wicked Spanish count. The house has about 4 floors and 19 rooms, more or less. The entire 4th floor was rented and occupied by a big American firm, and their bookkeeper, an American girl, has given us the following true account of the ghost that for years haunted the building. The 2nd floor is unoccupied, as no one cares to live there for obvious reasons. And the bottom floor is also unoccupied, save for lumber rooms, empty boxes, and crates and barrels. And last of all is a great patio with its tiled floor, where secretly, in the night, a duel was fought to the death by the wicked count and a famous Austrian prince, who was one of Maximilian's men. The count was killed. No one knows why the duel was fought. Some say it was because of a beautiful Spanish woman. Some say it was because of the treasure that the two jointly conveyed, and which the count refused to divide with his princely socio. And more people, Mexicans, shrug their shoulders if you ask about it, and say, ¿Quién sabe? I saw a ghost here last night, Miss James, announces our cashier with much eclat and evident pride. So great is the shock that I gasp and my pen drops, spattering red ink on my nice fresh clefts, and worse luck on the ledger page that I had just totted up. It's ruined, and I will have to erase it, or something, wretched man. I wish to goodness it had taken you off, I cry wrathfully as I look at the bespattered work. Now, will you just look here and see what you have done? I wish you and your ghost were in Gehenna, he inquires sweetly. I'll fix that. It won't take half a minute. And don't look so stern, else I won't tell you about the espanto. And you will be sorry if you don't hear about it. It would make such a good story. Then go ahead with it, I say. Well, last night, I was waiting for Wes. He was to meet me here, after which it was our intention to hit we were going out together, I nod scornfully. And it seems that while I was patiently waiting here in my usual sweet-tempered way, the blank idiot had his supper and then lay down to rest himself for a while. You know how delicate he is? Another contemptuous nod. Unfortunately, he forgot the engagement and slept on. He says he never awoke until 3 o'clock, and so didn't come, thinking I wouldn't be here. Meantime, I went to sleep, and might have snoozed on until 3, likewise, but for the fact that the ghost woke me. Well, do go on, I urge. The ghost woke me, as I said, proceeds the simpleton slowly. Remember, this book, okay, clarify, these books were written in the early 1800s, and they go all the way up to the 1940s. So some of the stuff in here may not be, you know, how we say things or react to things in this day and age, but that's the deal with the book. So when you say simpleton, you know, that's how we're going to go with it. Just don't, you know, have a fit turn me into Facebook police or anything like that, because that's just what it is, because these were written way back when. Again, the ghost woke me, as I said, proceeds the simpleton slowly. It was passing its cold fingers over my face and groaning. Really, it was most extraordinary. At first, I didn't know what it was. Then, As I felt the icy fingers stroking my face and heard blood-curdling groans issuing from the darkness, I knew what it was. And I remembered the story of the prince and his little duel down on the patio, and knew it was the ghost of the prince's victim. By the way, you don't know what a funny sensation it is to have a ghost pat your face, Miss James. Pat nothing, I retorted indignantly. I wonder you are not ashamed to tell me such fibs, such a tarradiddle. And as for the man that the prince killed downstairs, you know as well as I do that he was taken home to Spain and buried there. Why, then, should he come back here, into our offices, and pat your face? Ah, that I can't say. I can only account for it by thinking that the ghost had good, has good taste. Better than that of some people I know. But honestly, I swear that I'm telling you the truth. Cross my heart and hope to die if I am not. And you don't know how brave I was. I never screamed. In fact, I never made a sound. Oh, was I brave. Then what did you do? I asked sternly. I ran. Por Dios, how I ran. You remember with what alcatry we got down the stairs during the November earthquake? I remember only too distinctly. Well, last night's run wasn't a run in comparison. It was a disappearance, a flight, a sprint. I went down the four flights of stairs like a streak of blue lightning, and the ghost flew with me. I heard the pattering of his steps and his groans clean down the patio door. And I assure you, I quite thought I had made such an impression that it was actually going on home with me. And the thought made me feel so weak that I felt perforce obliged to take strengthen myself with a cocktail. After which I felt stronger and went home quite peacefully. But it was an uncanny experience, wasn't it? Was it before or after taking that cocktail? I asked incredulously. And did you take one only at 11? Did you take one only or at 11? I am hard on the man, but he really deserves it. Ghosts, spirits, perhaps, but not ghosts. Whereas his feelings are quite hurted. So much so that he vows he will never tell me anything again. I'd better about doubting Thomas. He has never seen such an unbelieving woman in all his life. And if I were only a man, he would be tempted to pray that I might see the ghost. It would serve me right. Then, wrathfully departs, to notice me no more that day. Not believing the least bit in ghosts, I gave the matter no more thought. In fact, when you fall heir to a set of books that haven't been posted for 19 days, and you have to do it all, and get up your trial balance too, or else give up your Christmas holidays, you haven't much time to think about ghosts or anything else except entries. And though I had been working 14 hours per day, the 24th of December, noon hour, I was for $30.89. I, of course, was located straight now before departing next morning on my week's holiday. Por supuesto, it meant night work. Nothing else would do. And besides, our plans had all been made to leave on the 8 o'clock train the next morning. So I would just sit up all night, if need be, to find the wretched balance and be done with it. Behold, me settled, let's see where to go. Okay, hang on a second, it jumped on me. Okay, behold, me settled in for work that night at 7 o'clock in my own office, with three lamps burning to keep it from looking dismal and lonely, and books and ledgers and journals piled up 2 feet high around me. If hard work would locate that nasty, hateful 1389, it would surely be found. I had told Portio downstairs on the ground floor to try and keep awake for a time. But if I didn't soon finish the work, I would come down and call him when I was ready to go home. He lived in a little room, all shut off from the rest of the building, so that it was rather difficult to get him. Besides, he was the very laziest and sleepiest peon possible. And though he was supposed to take care of the big building at night, patrolling it so as to keep off the ladrones, he in reality slept so soundly that the last trumpet, much less Mexican robbers, would not have roused him. And for this very reason, before settling into my work, I was careful to go around and look to locks and bolts myself. Everything was secure, and the door safely fastened. So that if the ladrones did break through, They would have to be in shape to pass through the keyholes or possess false keys. We never thought of spirits or porteros or anything else beyond the $13.89. I worked and added and re-added and footed up, and at 11 o'clock, gracias a Dios, I had the $13 all safe and would have whooped for joy had I the time. However, I wasn't out of the woods yet, the sum of $89 being often more easy a location than 89 cents. The latter must be found also before I could have the pleasure of shouting in celebration thereof. At it, I went again. After brain cajoling and more adding and prayerful thought, I at least had under my thumb that 80 cents. Eureka! Only 9 cents out. I could get it all straight and have some sleep, after all. Inspired by which thought, I smothered my yawns and again began to add. I looked at my watch. 10 minutes to 12. Perhaps I could get it fixed before 1. I suppose I had worked at 9 cents for about 20 minutes. One of the cash entries looked to me to be an error. I compared it with the voucher. Yes, that was just where the trouble lay. 11 cents, 10, 9. Out went the lights in the twinkling of an eye as I sat, gaping in my astonishment. From out of the pitchy darkness of the room came the most dreary, horrible, blood-curdling groan imaginable. As I sat paralyzed, not daring to breathe, doubting my senses for a moment, and then thinking indignantly that it was some trick of that wretched cashier, I felt long, thin, icy fingers passing gently over my face. Malgame Dios, what a sensation. At first I was afraid to move. Then I nervously tried to push the bony things away. As fast as I brushed, with my heart beating like a steam hammer and gasping with deadly fear, the fingers would come back again. A cold wind was blowing over me. Again came that dreadful groan. And too frightened to move or scream, I tumbled into a heap on the floor, among the books and ledgers. Then, I suppose, I fainted. When I regained my senses, I was still in a heap with the ledgers. Still, it was dark, and still I felt like the cold fingers caressing my face were still caressing my face, at which I became thoroughly desperate. No ghost should own me. I had laughed at the poor cashier and hintly darkly at cocktails. Pray, what better was I? I scrambled to my feet, the fingers still stroking my face. I must address them. What language? Did they understand English or Spanish? I wondered. Spanish would doubtless be most suitable, if indeed it was the ghost of the murdered count. Will you do me the favor, Señor Ghost? I started out bravely in my best Spanish, but with a very trembling voice, to inform me what it is that you desire. Is there anything I can do for you? Because, if not, I would like very much to be allowed to finish my work, which I cannot do, if you pardon the abruptness, if I'm alone and not alone. Being the ghost of a gentleman and a diplomat, surely he would take the hint and vanish. Perhaps the ghost did not understand my Spanish. At any rate, there was no articulate reply. There was another groan. Again, the fingers touched me, and then there was such a mournful sigh that I felt sorry for the poor thing. What could be the matter with it? With my pity, all fear was lost for a moment, and I said to the darkness about me, "What is it that you wish, pobre señor? Can I not aid you? I am not afraid. Let me help you." The fingers moved uncertainly for a moment. Then the ledgers all fell down with a loud bang. A cold hand caught mine very gently. I tried not to feel frightened, but it was difficult, and I was led off blindly through the offices. I could not see a thing, and not a glimmer of light showed. Not a sound was heard, except for my own footsteps, and the faint sound of the invisible something that was leading me along. There were no more groans, thank goodness, else I should have shrieked and fainted, without a doubt. Only the pattering footsteps and the cold hand that led me on and on. We, the fingers and I, were somehow in the great hall, then on the second floor, and at last on the stairs, going on down, flight after flight. Then I knew that I was being led about by the fingers on the tiled floor of the patio and close to the portero's lodge. Simpleton that he was, sleeping like a log, no doubt, while I was being led about in the black darkness by an invisible hand and no one to save me. I would have yelled, of course, but for one fact. I found it utterly impossible to speak or move my tongue, being a rare and uncomfortable sensation. But where were we going? Back into the unused lumber rooms, joining onto the patio? Nothing there except barrels and slabs and empty boxes. What could the ghost mean? He must be utterly demented, surely. In the middle of the first room, we paused. I had an idea of rushing out and screaming for the portero, but abandoned it when I found that my feet wouldn't go. I heard steps passing to and fro about the floor and waited, cold and trembling. They approached me. Again, and my hand was taken, and I was led over near the corner of the room. Obedient to the unseen will, I bent down and groped about the floor, guided by the cold fingers holding mine, until I felt something like a tiny ring set firmly on the floor. I pulled at it faintly, but it did not move, at which the ghost gave a faint sigh. For a second, the cold fingers pressed mine, quite affectionately, then released me, and I heard steps passing slowly into the patio, then dying away. Where was it going? And what on earth did it all mean? But I was so tired and wrought up, I tried to find the door, but couldn't. The cashier would have been revenged could he have seen me stupidly falling at the barrel, thinking it was the door. And at last, too fatigued and sleepy to stand, I dropped down on the cold stone floor and went to sleep. I must have slept for some hours, for when I awoke, the light of dawn was coming in at the window, and I sat up and wondered if I had taken leave of my senses during the night. What on earth could I be doing here in the lumber room? Then, like a flash, I remembered and half unconsciously crept about on the floor seeking the small ring. There it was. I caught it and jerked it hard. Hey, presto change. For it seemed to me that the entire floor was giving way. There was a sliding, crashing sound, and I found myself hanging on for dear life to a barrel that, fortunately, retained its equilibrium. And with my feet dangling into space, down below me was a small stone-floored room with big boxes and small ones ranged about the walls. Treasure. Like a flash, the thought struck me, and with one leap I was down in the secret room, gazing about at the boxes. But alas, upon investigation, the biggest chest proved empty, the bad wicked count. No wonder he couldn't rest in his Spanish grave, but must come back to the scene of his wickedness and deceit to make reparation. But the smaller chests were literally crowded with all sorts of things. Big, heavy Spanish coins and gold and silver dinner services with a crest of the unfortunate emperor, magnificent pieces of jeweled armor and weapons, beautiful jewelry, and loose precious stones. I deliberately selected handfuls of the latter, giving my preference to the diamonds and pearls. I had always had a taste for them, which I had never before been able to gratify, and packed them in a wooden box that I found in the lumber room. The gold and dinner services and armor, etc., I left as they were, being rather cumbersome, and carried off, rejoicing my big box of diamonds and pearls and other jewelry. Needless to say, we didn't go away for the holidays on the 8 o'clock train, but I did come down to the office and proceeded to locate my missing 9 cents, after which I unfolded the tale of the ghost and the treasure, only keeping quiet the matter of my private loot, of which I was heartily glad afterwards. For when the government learned of the find, what do you suppose they offered me for going about with the ghost and discovering the secret room and treasure? $10,000. When I refused, stating that I would take merely as my reward one of the gold dining services, the greedy things objected first. But I finally had my way, and to this very day, they have no idea that even I, have all the beautiful jewels. Wouldn't they be furious if they knew it? But they aren't apt to, unless they learn English and read this story, which isn't likely. Okay, so we've come up on the end of our reading time, and I want to thank everybody for spending time with me. Last night, I did take, we spent a few hours building a Easter gingerbread house. And close the tank, let me get this down to where I can get to my stuff that I need to. And we didn't finish last night because it was a bigger build that I thought it was going to be, a completely different build. So I'm still putting the roof on it. I just have one, I have one panel of the roof on right now. So tonight I should be able to finish it. So tomorrow, like I said earlier, I'm going to be in the big studio. We're going to be working on our Lego Yoda. So as that starts, I'm going to go ahead and show you guys what the gingerbread house looks like. I'm also going to take some video and some photos anyway of the eggs, the gingerbread house, and all that stuff. So you guys will see it anyway. I'm going to post it like on all my social media pages, so you guys will get a chance to take a look at it. But it was a great project. The house turned out really nice and turned out a lot better than I thought it was going to. All right, if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We are equal opportunity here. We're just trying to get the word out about our little old show. And so far, you guys are helping us out, doing a great job of it. And I hope that you keep it up, and I hope you keep watching us. And, you know, we got a great line of shows coming up this week. I'll be on tomorrow on my own. Nancy Matz will be on Tuesday. And then Stan Dale will be on Thursday. And then we also have great lineup. Well, all in all, a great lineup this week. Okay, guys, I'm going to sign off now. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and I will see you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Enjoy. Bye.